Hashem has the mule, which naturally does not speak. Hashem has that mule speak to Bilam, and this is supposed to be a sign for Bilam that Hashem controls who speaks and who doesn't. And Bilam is warned time and again that Hashem will control what he says and how he says it. Now, the story of Bilam is brought down in short in our parsha. The Gemara says, the Gemara in Baba Basra records what Sfarim, the different prophets, compiled. The Gemara says, Moshe Rabbeinu compiled three Sfarim. Sifro, his Sefer Torah, the Sefer Torah. The book of Iyov, that's one opinion in the Gemara. And Parshat Bilam, the Parsha of Bilam. And this seems to indicate that Moshe compiled a separate book recording what happened with Bilam. Because it's not talking about the Parsha of Bilam in the Torah. That the Gemara already said, he compiled the Torah. So he compiled the Torah, the book of Iyov, and his book. There was a separate book which got lost over the generations. And in that book, he recorded the full story. What we have in the Torah is a shorter version of the story. So Bilam is on his way, and the donkey speaks to him, the mule speaks to him and drops dead. I guess the rest of the way he had to do by foot, or maybe he hitched a ride with them. Yeah?
But that means that the book of Iyov, or the book that we lost, was also given from Hashem directly when the prophets write this. Because this, what we have here, is not from Moshe. Moshe wrote it, but it was given from Hashem directly.
I think anything Moshe said for most of his life was prophecy. Mm-hmm. We lost many of the prophets' works. What we have is what's important. Every prophecy was written down. The prophet would have to come, tell his prophecy to the high court, and it would be written down. And then they would give him a stamp saying, we approve, he is a board certified prophet, and this prophecy was given certification to be given over. So Moshe, I don't think, had to go through that procedure, but his prophecy, the Torah was written, and the book of Bilam was probably also written. And it was probably also in prophecy, and it got lost. But it wouldn't be the first prophecy that got lost, and it wouldn't be the only prophecy that got lost.
It sounds only weird when you say it's a shorter version, because...
because the Torah isn't here to tell us a story. The Torah is telling us what's important from the Torah's perspective to tell us. So Bilam continues on his path, and Balak hears that Bilam's coming. He goes out to greet him. And Balak tells Bilam, I sent messengers time and again to call you. Why didn't you come? What, do you think I can't honor you? So Balak obviously knows what keeps Bilam ticking. He tells him, I could honor you. He knows what Bilam's interested in. So Bilam tells him, look, I've come. Now you think I could say anything? Whatever God says, that's what I say. I don't have a choice. So Bilam has laid the cards on the table. He said, I'm under God's control. Bilam goes with Balak. They go straight to business. They come to a large city, a city filled with bustling marketplaces. And Balak starts offering sacrifices. Who offers the sacrifices? Balak, the king, not Bilam. Balak is going to offer sacrifices a number of times throughout our parasha. And these sacrifices, our sages say, were offered with a full heart to Hashem. And these sacrifices, total in number 42, our sages say they had a tremendous impact in heaven. One Midrash says that and the merit that he offered these sacrifices, he merited to have Rus, the mother of the Davidic dynasty, the great-great-grandmother of King David, Rus. So we know Rus came from Eglon, the king of Moab, but the Medrash says she also came from Balak, the king of Moab, which would make sense, because obviously most kingdoms have a dynasty, so if she came from Eglon, then it would make sense that Eglon came from Balak. But the Medrash says he merited to have Rus because he offered these sacrifices. He offered a total of 42 sacrifices. In the time of Elisha, found the Jewish people sinful. They were serving idols. And most of the Jewish people were wiped out. The verse says that there will remain 7,000 Jews. That's all. 7,000 Jews, the Navi says. So different sages interpret it in different ways, but there's a Medrash that seems to take it literally, that there were literally 7,000 Jews left, the rest that all served idols and were killed. And that Medrash says that the reason the Jews couldn't get atoned for was because of Balak's sacrifices. Balak went up to serve his sacrifices, Bamos Baal, our sages say. He brought those sacrifices corresponding to the idol worship of Baal that the Jews would do in the future generations. We know they did it in the time of Eliyahu, the prophet Eliyahu. And we know that in the time of his disciple, Elisha, they were still serving the idol of Baal. And at one point, it seems that so many Jews were punished for serving the Baal that there were only 7,000 Jews left. And our sages attribute that, the fact that the Jews were wiped out to such an extent, to these sacrifices that Balak brought. And at one point, they had bitter waters, and Elisha fixed those waters, and a group of young men started chasing after him, and they said, "Alei Kerech, go up, bald one. You're not like your Rebbe. Your Rebbe Eliyahu could keep the Jewish people intact. They served the idol of Baal, and yet the Jews were intact. And you, because of you, all the Jews have fallen, and only 7,000 left. You've made us bald. There's nothing left." And Elisha said, "It's not my fault. This all goes back to Balak's sacrifices." That's what our sages say. This conversation is not recorded in the prophets. What is recorded is that Elisha cursed them, and bears came out of the forest and destroyed 42 kids. 42 kids corresponding to Balak's 42 sacrifices. Balak offers sacrifices, and Bilam goes out to see what God will tell him. And God appears to Bilam, and Bilam says, "I've established the 7 sacrifices. I've brought cows, I've brought ayil, rams on the sacrifice, on the altars." And God tells him, "Go back and you'll say the following prophecy." He comes back, he lifts his staff, and he says, "Balak, the king of Moab, leads me out from Aram, from the mountains of the east." And he says, "Come curse Yaakov, come get anger out against the Jews. What will I curse? God hasn't cursed. What will I spurn the anger? God isn't angry." Our sages say that every day God is angry for a second. Ki rega ve'apo. And throughout Balak's time, throughout the time that Bilam wanted to turn God's anger against the Jews, God said, "I'm turning the laws of nature. I will not get angry today." Every day, at sometime during sunrise, at sometime during the early morning hours, God gets angry. And no one could get that split second but Bilam. And Bilam knew how to catch that split second and turn that anger against whatever he wanted. And that's how he had his curses work. And God said, "No, I'm not getting angry." That's why in the Haftarah, God says to the Jewish people, he says, "Ami zechon nama ya'atz Balak umeanauto Bilam." Remember what Balak had thought to do, what Bilam answered, that God didn't get angry during this period, and that's why Bilam lost his power. So Bilam tells him, "How could I spurn God's anger? God didn't begin to get angry today. I see the Jewish people from afar, and they're a nation that rests like they're a nation that levadad ishkon, dwells alone. You can't count them among the nations. They're much higher than the rest of the nations. Who could count them? If only I died like them." Balak tells him, "What'd you do? I called you to curse them. You blessed them." He tells him, I do what God says. Nothing I could do." So he says, "Okay, let me take you to a different place. Maybe from there you'll be able to curse them." Again, 7 altars and 7 cows, 7 rams. Again, Bilam goes out. Again, Hashem shows up to Bilam. And again, he returns and he tells him, "God doesn't lie. He's not a man that changes his mind. Whatever God says, that's what he'll do. God says he'll bless the people. He's not going to change his mind. He saw nothing wrong among the Jews. Hashem, their God, is with them. They have the special trumpets of the king of Hashem with them. God took them out of Egypt. the Jewish people don't go like the non-Jews, that they go with all kinds of EGBG, witchcraft. They don't need that. Our sages say, what does it mean, ki lo nachash b'Yaakov lo kesem b'Yisrael? They don't need the witchcraft. They don't need the sorcery like the other nations. And it doesn't work for them, because they're above that. Ka'et, like this time, ya'amer li Yaakov l'Yisrael ma'pa'al el, what God did for them, the kindness He did for them. Our sages say, the Rambam in the end of Igeres Teman says, what does it mean, ka'et, like this time, it will be told to Jacob and to Israel what God has done. The Rambam says this verse is saying that just like this time, year 2448, count another 2,448 years into the future, God will bring back the prophecy to the Jewish people. That's what the Rambam says in Igeres Teman. Happens to be that that's around the Rambam's time. And it, when did it happen? What prophet was around? The year 2448 plus 2448?
I don't have it in my mind, but it's written.
4896? It's interesting because a lot of the sages understood that it didn't happen.
Yeah? It's written here.
It's written there that a prophet showed up the year 4896?
According to the Rambam's word, indeed around the year 4976, we find a number of sages among the Jewish people who achieved the prophecy. Rav Shmuel the prophet and the son of Yehuda HaChassid, Rav Elazar of Worms, author of Keach, Ramban, Ra'avat.
They had prophecy?
And the Tosafist Ezra of Monkantur, known as Ezra the prophet.
Okay, I don't know what to tell you. I could only tell you that on the one hand, we're not supposed to try to figure out when the Messiah is going to come. The Rambam in Igeres Teman says he has this tradition from his forefathers that this is how you're supposed to understand this verse and that the prophecy will return, and that's a prelude for the Messiah. Rashi in Daniel says that many have tried to figure out from the verses in Daniel when the Messiah is going to come, and date after date has passed, and the Messiah hasn't come. So says Rashi, I'll tell you what I understand, but the rule is, if the date passes and the Messiah hasn't come, so then you know that that person misunderstood the verse and tried to understand it a different way. It means that's not the right understanding. That's what Rashi says. So in this yeshiva, I'm sure they tell you the Maharal. The Maharal says that every understanding in the verse is correct. It's just a potential understanding. And if we live up to what we're supposed to be, then that understanding will come true. And if we don't, it's like we hit snooze on the alarm clock. Got to figure out a new understanding.
But that means that the Mashiach has to come right now, after that.
No, all it says is that prophecy will return, and then sometime after that, the Messiah is going to come. How long after that, who knows? At any rate, it doesn't seem to have worked. Many have already said it doesn't seem like prophecy returned. Then you're the first person to tell me that prophecy returned to the Jewish people
it's
the year 4976. Okay, obviously they want to back the Rambam. What can I do? Let's continue. So Bilam blesses the Jewish people. He says, Matovu alecha Yaakov. How good are your tents, Jacob? What good does he see in their tents that each one's opening did not correspond to the other one's opening, so they wouldn't see into one another's tent? We're accustomed to tznius being modest. I don't show what I am. Here we see there's another level of tznius we're supposed to aspire to live up to, and that is that we're supposed to think in advance so as not to see into someone else's privacy. A person could say, what can I do? I saw something lo tzanua. The answer is, could you have done something? Could you have gone a different route? You should have gone a different route. We know that women go to mikveh, and it's immodest to know when a woman goes to mikveh. So a person knows where the mikveh is, he should make a point of not going near the mikveh in the evenings. A person could say, what do you mean? Is it my fault I saw so-and-so's wife coming out of the mikveh? Yeah, it's your fault. Who told you to go that route? The tznius is matovu alecha Yaakov. A person is supposed to live on a level where he avoids seeing. He thinks in advance as he won't see. A person could say, I walked out of my house, so I saw what's going on in their tent. Is it that they left their door open? What can I do? No, don't have your door opposite their door. That was the great tznius of the Jewish people, that they thought in advance so as not to transgress the laws of tznius. Bilam has to bless the Jewish people. And when he blesses them, he's limited in what he could do. God tells him what to say. God tells him what the blessings should be. But when he can, he sticks in his bad eye. And so when Bilam blesses them, he has to bless them like a plant growing on water. And he blesses them like the great cedar trees growing on water. There was a prophet who lived from the time of Moshe, a few hundred years, till the time of King David. His name was Achia Shiloni. He lived past David HaMelech, past Shlomo. He lived till the time of Shlomo's offspring, till Rechavam. And Achia was told to curse the Jewish people. But he's a Jew, he doesn't want to curse them. So when he curses them, he says, V'ika Hashem et Yisrael, God will smite the Jewish people. Kasher yanuda kaneh, as the reed is smashed by the waves back and forth, betoch hamayim, in the water. Our sages say we were better off with Achia's curse than with Bilaam's blessing. Bilaam blessed us like a cedar tree. A cedar tree might grow proud, but a cedar tree can be knocked over with strong winds. Achia Shiloni cursed us, but he cursed us like a reed. A reed, as much as the winds and the waters try to knock him over, because he's pliable, because he is soft, he will never be broken. He'll sway this way and that way and maintain his ground. It's interesting that our sages said a person shouldn't be proud, he shouldn't be like the cedar trees. Bilaam, who is proud, so even in his blessings, he blesses with pride. Be like a cedar tree. Proud person is easily overturned. Achia is a modest Jew. He's a humble person. Our sages say a person should learn to be modest and humble like the reed. The reed always bends over. That's a modest, humble person. The reed merits that you take a reed to make a quilt, to write a Sefer Torah. Whenever you read in Chazal about kaneh that you write a Sefer Torah with, that's like the Sephardi custom that they write with a reed. They cut a reed to write a Sefer Torah. The Ashkenazi custom has evolved that we use a feather. But the ancient custom in the time of the Gemara was that you wrote Sefer Torah with a kaneh, with a reed. Our sages say a person should always train himself to be modest like a reed. The humble, small reed merits to be used for a Sefer Torah. When Bilaam leaves, he says to Balak, after three attempts to curse the people, and at each attempt they offer 14 sacrifices, a total of 42 sacrifices, Bilaam tells him, I'm going back to my nation. Our sages say Bilaam recognized that his lust had caused him to lose the level of prophecy. He has lost focus. He will never again attain the level of prophecy he had before. And therefore he says, Inani olech la'ami, I'm going back to my nation. I'm going to die like my forefathers, like Lavan, like Besua, like Nachar. I'm doomed for idol worship. That's it. I've lost it. I'm going back to my nation means I'm going back to the ways of my forefathers. I'll give you a piece of advice, Bilaam says. You want the Jews to sin, cause them to sin with Znus, and that'll be their downfall. And so Balak sends his daughters, and he sends other girls out there, and he sends old women to sell beautiful linen garments. And the old women have a high price, and inside the tent there are young women with a cheap price. And the women offer them strong wine to drink, and they drink the wine. And once they drink the wine, they are easily seduced. Our sages instituted that one does not drink wine with non-Jews, because if one drinks wine, ultimately one comes to eat meals, one comes to marry, and marriage brings to Avodah Zarah. And that's what happened in our parsha. At the end of our parsha, the Jews come and they intermingle with the Moabite women, they drink wine with them, they eat meals with them, they ultimately marry them, and they ultimately serve their idols. And there's a great plague at the end of our parsha. One of the leaders of the tribe of Shimon, he himself takes a Midianite girl to sin with her. We see that the Midianites also sent their girls to cause the people to sin. And God tells Moshe, establish the Sanhedrin and punish the people who have sinned. And this leader of Shimon, his tribe comes to him and they say, save us, we're all going to die. So Zimri ben Salu, he grabs this Midianite girl by the lock of hair and he says, come with me. And she says, no, my father told me not to go with anyone but their greatest leader. I'm the son, the daughter of kings. And he says, don't worry, I'll show you, I'm a great leader. And he takes her by the lock of hair and he brings her in front of Moshe. And he says, Moshe, this Midianite girl, am I allowed to go with her or not? And if you tell me yes, I'll go with her. And if you tell me no, then who gave you permission to marry a Midianite girl? You also married a Midianite girl. And then he takes her to the tent and he goes to sin with her. Pinchas, the son of Elazar, the son of Aaron, comes up to Moshe and he says, Rebbe, you taught us that if a guy goes and has marital relations with a non-Jewish girl, then Kanaim, a person who's a board-certified Kanai, that the Sanhedrin says is fit to be a Kanai is allowed to go and kill him during the time that he's performing the act. Moshe told him, I forgot, you're right, that's the halacha. You said it, you go do it. So Pinchas says, okay, you give me certification, I'm a Kanai, I'm going to go do it. He takes the staff and he wants to go kill him. The people of Shimon say, hey, what you doing? Pinchas says, I want a girl too. What do you mean? Why not me? And so he wobbles into the crowd, into the tribe of Shimon, and he walks up to the tent and he sticks his knife into the tent and he stabs Zimri and Cosby, the Midianite girl, and he kills them. There are three people who get killed. Kanoim are allowed to kill them. A person who is Bo'el Aramit, specifically, one who has marital relations with a non-Jewish woman. He is allowed to be killed at the time of the act by a Kanai, a person who is board certified as a zealous person for God's name. A person who steals a holy vessel from the temple. And a person who kills God's name with the name of an Avodah Zarah. May we all merit to bless God's name. And may we have a good Shabbos.